losing. All of your tells me that you're true. There's nothing in the air more. Can we process antivirus systems? I'll be wrecking. Command line's all I need for now, cause I'm pure. All right, this is Pure Decking for Thursday, October the 4th, 1957. This is a show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps, and tonight we have Big Brother, we have Sard, and we have Suave. I just polished off my second shot of Red Stag. What are you guys drinking tonight?
Jock Top.
That's all right.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. I ask you guys this every week, and just, like, Suave is still unprepared.
I was going to say, you'd think we'd be prepared, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
Not on this show.
No, I actually was going to go get a drink, but then you're like, we only have 2 minutes, so I'm like, well, fuck it.
Well, we play music for about 30 seconds. You could have gotten, grabbed, you know, something. So, I don't know. Big, you drinking anything?
Williams, and I'm eating nachos.
Nachos out fucking standing. Hang on.
Toasty!
There you go. So, anyways, just some quick station news. Someone I don't know actually was posting the show in the Cyberpunk subreddit. Thank you, Maitachi. I don't know who you are, but I appreciate it. So, that's cool. I mean, as far as I know, he's not related to the station at all, so that's just awesome. And
that's way cool. Do you have a link to the subreddit?
We can put one in the sub notes.
It's just like reddit.com/r/cyberpunk.
Yeah. I think we're back to like the second or third page now, but it was 4 days ago he posted it. It was pretty cool of him.
If you don't know, with Reddit, you can actually type in the subreddit name first. It'll be cyberpunk.reddit.com. Take you the same place.
Really?
That used to not work.
That is amazing.
Nice. So, anyways, oh, and as a side note, I know we were talking about it. Like literally right after the show last week, I got my Pirate Box working. I had pulled down the wrong OpenWrt image to set for Pirate Box, but strangely enough, it was the correct one for my router. So, I had to get one for a different router and load it on there because it was similar enough and it worked. So, got that going. It's still kind of touchy, but I had it up and going most of the week and nobody touched it.
Bummer.
Have either of you guys had any luck with people using your pirate boxes?
Not a single hit.
Yeah,
I actually haven't had mine out there yet, but as soon as I do, I'll let you guys
know. Like, generally, it's just been running at my apartment building, so there's like probably like 8 people who can see it, who probably already have their own Wi-Fi and never would really like try to connect to a random network connection. I don't really spend any time in coffee shops, so...
I was running it at work, and nothing. You would have expected somebody to hit it there, but
what you
got to
do is
sign.
Just rename it.
Yeah.
Same network that's already there.
The super guest, and then you know, have people get pissed off. They're like, well, I can't get on the internet. I keep getting this strange chat box that says share freely. What's that? So, anyways, and I know we haven't talked. We don't normally hit politics much on Pure Decking, but I'm just gonna flat out throw it out there. I'm not talking election. At all. We nail it on Big Show. And two, it has no bearing. If they say something that matters, we'll talk about it. But I'll be frank about it. I'm pretty burnt out on politics.
Oh, yeah.
So I blame Swab for that because he and I argue on the other show. So and offline. So, but yeah. So we're just not even going to go there flat out. And, unless something relevant comes up. But anyway, so I just wanted to kind of point that out and get it out of the way. So if anybody wants to know what I think about the election, too bad. I'm not going to tell you. Or you can listen to Big Show, and I'll probably spout it out there. But anyway, so I think it's the beginning of the end again, or part two. 3D printers are pretty much next on the list of illegal technologies, you know, right after MP3s and BitTorrents. You know, we've seen a couple of news stories with a lot of speculation, and I've got one in the stack tonight. And it's just, these things are just barely starting to get going. I mean, you're starting to get public recognition. More and more people are starting to get into them. It's still fairly underground, and now you're starting to see the stories of, you know, oh no, people are using them to circumvent, you know, the copyright on shapes, which I didn't know you could copyright a shape. I thought that was more of a patent thing. But, you know, it's, oh, they can be used to make weapons. They can be used to make, you know, well, anything. That's kind of the point.
You know what can be used to make weapons? A lathe.
You know what can be used to make weapons? Rocks and sticks.
Yeah. We outlaw them now.
Yeah, well, when talk to Tack about that, my understanding is they actually have outlawed the pointy stick in Britain. So, I mean, you're starting to see it, and it just seems to me like anytime somebody does something unexpected with technology, they figure out an easy way to share content between all their friends, and it's, you know, it's not restricted and it's open, or they're figuring out how to make a device that makes other things. And, you know, when they're inventing these things, nobody's giving a flying rat's ass about copyright or, you know, who owns the rights to anything. They're just seeing what they can make it do. And I think that's one of the reasons the companies get all bent out of shape about this, and, you know, politicians and everybody else, is it's all, well, they weren't thinking about our rights when they were making it. It's like, well, no, why would they? So I think there's a bit of, well, you're not considering our needs all the time kind of going on there. But
I think I know the true underlying reason. These people have watched Terminator too many times, and as soon as they hear the riprap can build other riprap's, they're like, oh, hell no. Hell no.
I don't understand technology, and it makes me afraid.
Well, they've seen Stargate a couple of times, and the new MakerBot was called the Replicator, so...
Run!
It's like, oh god! But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I see it a lot in the security side of things, too. People get really bent out of shape whenever you figure out something new you can do. And, I mean, more back on 3D printers, we're just starting to see it. I mean, there was an article, Big, I think you sent it to me, about, or maybe it was the other way around, I don't remember, where they were speculating on how a lot of different manufacturers were going to start going after people who posted CAD files the same way the recording industry goes after people who post MP3s. You know, the Pirate Bay already has a, what do they call it, a Fizzibles or Physicals, or I got some funky name for it, but like, you know, the whole, you wouldn't download a car, fuck you, I wouldn't, I mean...
Awesome.
You know, Pirate Bay's got, somebody posted a whole bunch of 3D models for a car on the Pirate Bay, just to make that joke, right? Because of the,
BRB, you know, gonna go download a car.
Well, you know, you think about it, if your desktop 3D printer, if you scale it up and give it the ability to work with a few more different materials, it's not unfeasible that you could print more simple machines. Maybe not a modern, you know, sports car, but... You know, if you get one of the high-end 3D printers, I think you probably could print out a Model T.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, look at the other high-end model 3D printers they've got out there. You can actually cast stuff in metal. They actually do make working parts for, like, Caterpillar machines.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I know this isn't quite on the same level, but I actually saw a printable steam engine the other day. Now, obviously, it's kind of hard to run on steam because it's printed out of plastic, but yeah, you could just cast it in metal and it works fine. But I've seen it tested with compressed air and it worked perfectly.
Well, and
pretty
of course
damn awesome, like building an engine with a 3D printer.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got the story later down in the show where, you know, of course, it's been all over the place. A couple of guys were designing a gun that could be 3D printed, and they were leasing an industrial 3D printer, and the company said, "Oh, hell no."
Yeah, because it's probably against their terms and conditions for the lease.
Well, they were coming back, well, we're not actually manufacturing a gun, we're trying to design one, so we'll talk about it more when we get to the story, but I'm just, you're seeing it more and more, it's like here's something new and something amazing coming out of the internet, essentially, you know, right. Where you can have a desktop 3D printer. I mean, this is a, you know, Alpha 0.01 replicator out of Star Trek. I mean, so is Christmas and only works in, you know, one... It only works in one material, and it's really hard to get it to give you a ham sandwich. But, I mean, you know, you can kind of see it from there.
You know, so, I kind of wish we had Cory Doctorow on the show to talk about 3D printing. He's got quite a few ideas.
Well, I've got I've got one of his stories later on in the stack too, but just kind of because it was funny. But yeah, I mean, I honestly think these things are awesome. I think it's going to be great because you're going to start seeing. I kind of was looking at some stuff historically, and if you look back early in the Victorian era, when there wasn't much manufacturing, you had a lot of people carrying around a lot of interesting stuff, but it was all unique because they were going to individual makers, right? It wasn't industrially stamped. You know, somebody would have a ring that was made by a jewel crafter, or, you know, a desk that was made by a crafter, and it was unique because somebody made it by hand, right? It was theirs, and very few people. I mean, even things like plates and cups, because they were manufactured individually. They weren't stamped out by a big machine. Now, don't get me wrong, I've got no problem with industrial fabricated goods. My house is full of them, but you know, and it gets costs down because obviously having everything made by hand is really, really expensive. But a lot of this stuff with like microcontrollers, Arduinos, Tensys, you know, I just got the Tensy 3.0 in and I haven't really played with it yet, but it looks neat. And it's got a lot of touch sensors on it, so I'm going to have some fun with that. I wonder if that's what they used in the tentacle porn that was posted on Hackaday. But,
Teledildonics.
There you go. But, you know, things like microcontrollers that are cheap and easy to program, and 3D printers, I think you're going to start seeing people getting back to making their own individual stuff. Like, I'm looking at making my own strip heater, essentially, for fabricating encasing so I can make my own music controllers for the computer. It's drilling holes and putting buttons in, wiring it up to a microcontroller, but these aren't going to be mass-produced. These are going to be super unique because I'll have made them. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And I think you're going to start seeing more and more people doing stuff like that, where they've got a 3D printer and they ordered a couple of, you know, $10 microcontrollers and maybe another $50 in miscellaneous parts, and they put together something unique and it's theirs and it does something for them. Maybe it's some kind of a dock for their cell phone that, you know, lets them play a game, or custom controllers, or, you know, even simpler stuff where it's just, you know, they fixed something that in their house that broke with a 3D printer, and so suddenly that thing's now unique. It's theirs, and it doesn't look like anyone that's out there. And
you know,
I think it's awesome.
Oh, it absolutely is. But I can pretty much guarantee you, good, like that's going to be about 5% of owners of 3D printers. The vast majority of people who own 3D printers aren't going to be the designers. They're going to be the consumers. They're just going to hop onto Thingiverse, and, you know, go down like, you know, the cup or the doorknob or the coat hook or whatever, and they'll just print it off and be done with it. But, you know, that's fine, and that's going to put a lot of manufacturers and stuff like that out of business, really.
Well, like, I don't know about that, but I could see a lot of manufacturers getting high-end 3D printers.
Well, okay, look at it like this. Printing, like actual printing images and stuff like that, resumes, all that sort of stuff. It didn't exactly put people out of business, but like the number of printers out there, like professional printers for getting stuff printed out, has dropped dramatically, and they've basically had to like just kind of be absorbed by like big places like Best Buy and stuff like that, where they've got like their copier department, because nobody can really afford to like run just like a printing store anymore. And that's pretty much kind of what's happening with 3D printers. Like, The first actual home, like, laserjet printer that first came out was about $2,000, you know, the consumer-grade one, and it was a very early adopter-type deal, and that's kind of where we've hit right now with these 3D printers. We now actually have consumer-grade 3D printers available on the market for about $2,000 that are actually, like, all nice plastic cases and, like, transparent domes and, like, you know, easy to use, no finicky, like, dealing with the configurations or anything like that. So that's there. So give it another 5-10 years, and it's going to be like the $100 printer that you pick up at Walmart, and you'll just be able to pick that up and bring that home and print stuff out, like no dealing with any sort of headaches or anything like that. And when you have something that's that powerful for $100, everybody's going to have one, and I can pretty much guarantee.
Are you saying it's going to be cheaper to throw the printer away and buy a new one than it is to replace the spools of plastic?
Yeah, absolutely. look at what's in one of the printers. You know, and it actually, the spool of plastic one is just like an intermediate step. That method of printing isn't going to last. It's going to be, I can't remember the name of it. Basically, the powder method, where it melts the powder plastic, or it lays epoxy down on the powder, because you get a lot finer detail with that, and you can do a lot different shapes that have like where you don't actually need to print supports for it or anything like that. And you know, when you're printing with something like that, or even using like UV with a special type of epoxy, when you're printing with something like that, you're gonna have cartridges. So that's where the companies are gonna make their money again. Let's not forget that printer ink is the most expensive liquid on the planet.
That's manufactured. I think that's
absolutely.
Think that's actually the cost of ink there. But it's interesting, and I'm just afraid it's going to be, you know, you've got these manufacturers looking at what's happened to some of their industries, and they're already starting to say, no, you can't print that shape. We own it. Which scares me a little bit, because I wasn't aware you could copyright a shape. But I mean, I just you know, all this stuff, and I mean, this is kind of overarching. I mean, I cover so much, I guess you'd call it bad news.
Mm-hmm.
I'm beginning to wonder, maybe we ought to just say, fuck it, I'll go darknet and be done with it. I mean, I guess I'm getting a little cynical, but it's grating on me. You know what I mean?
Well, it's yeah, like, but like, you know, it's one of those things where it's going to be completely unenforceable. You know, just look at like regular printing. You know, people can print books and copyrighted news articles and all kinds of stuff like that, images and you name it, people print it out. And there's not a damn thing that anybody can do about it, because it's in the privacy of their own homes.
You don't see the letters I have to deal with at work every day because some kid is downloading a movie. And, I mean, they are aggressive. And granted, you can
ignore different,
them,
though. I mean, are they printing the movie out?
No, but they're consuming it without...
I just want to interject here. I have now successfully downloaded a car.
Yes!
Nice.
Awesome. So I just, you know, I mean, it's, I guess I'm getting a little cynical, but I mean, I know lots of people who are thinking the same way I am. It's just like, this is just getting stupid. They keep coming at us with these laws. They keep, you know, pushing and pushing and pushing. I mean, what happens when they finally get enough people to throw up their hands and just say, fuck it, I'm living on tour. You're never going to be able to figure out who I am. And, oh, yeah, we're going to quit giving you guys the exploits we find. We're just going to use them. Mm-hmm. What happens when there's no more white hats because you've pissed everybody off?
True.
I kind of think that Swan's idea of 3D printing is a bit too romantic. Yeah, a bit too Asimov.
Well, I've got to balance things out here a little bit, guys. Come on.
You're the one jumping on me whenever I try to do good news, so, you know. I wonder, and I kind of get that feeling. I mean, especially some of the foreign countries you hear about. In Germany, the laws on doing security work are so draconian. Like, I couldn't do the show in Germany. They're so draconian with it. Like, you get caught using free open source software over there, you can go to jail. Last I heard, anyways. So, or moving right along into what it's gotten to in the Philippines. This is the link I've got from CBS News, but this is all over the place. The Philippines has a population of over 95 million, more than a quarter of which use the internet. And if it's really true that statistics don't lie, then Filipinos are definitely some of the most social online users. With more than 25 million Filipinos on Facebook and close to 10 million on Twitter, Filipinos rank among the top 10 users of both sites in the world. But if you're one of those who seldom think twice about clicking a like button on a friend's post, or retweeting somebody else's post, think again. Doing so in the Philippines may land you in jail. On September 12th, President Bendigo Aquino III, I hope I'm saying his name right, I'm American, I'm sorry, signed into law the Cybercrime Prevention Act, which defines several new acts of crime committed online, including, among others, cyber sex, identity theft, hacking, spamming, and pornography. Pornography. That's like most of the internet.
Oh.
While that's all good, really, while that's all good, certain provisions of the law have millions of Filipinos up in arms, foremost of which is online libel. If you click like, you can be sued. And if you share, you can be sued, said Senator Tisfino Guinigano. Somebody help me with these names. I feel like I'm making fun of them, and I'm not. Desfino Guingana?
Oh, here, let me have a look here. I'm really good at reading names.
I feel like I'm making fun of these guys, and I'm not. I'm really not.
His name is Ted. Just go with Ted.
Ted.
Guingana.
Guingana? Okay, that works. One of the lawmakers who voted against the passage of the law. Even Mark Zuckerberg can be charged with cyber libel, the senator said. The provision, according to Guingana, is so broad and vague, it's not even clear who should be liable for a given statement online. And if you're found guilty, you can spend up to 12 years in prison. Who's liable? Who isn't? Who, the one who made the original post, the ones who shared, the ones who tweet, even you, if you post a simple he, right? Does that mean you agree? I'm going to stop reading because the article's not that greatly written, but and there's more names in here that I don't know how to say. In short, what's happened is the Philippines have passed a cybercrime prevention law that is so broad and vague that people are worried about being sued for liking a video.
Wow. I'd kind of like to see them sue Mark Zuckerberg. Just extradite him to the Philippines and sue him for something that he posted.
Well, I mean, think about it. Their law is so draconian that if they can tie a post back to you, even like if you just shared a link, that you can be sued for posting it because it's online libel. Or if it's pornography, what happens if you go, you know, pornography is outlawed. What happens if you go to a website and it happens to be one of those pop-up sites? Or, no, you know...
I gotta say, this really sounds like another one of those knee-jerk, completely unenforceable laws.
Completely unenforceable.
Yeah, but like, even those kind of laws have an effect.
Yeah. Maybe mass exodus of all men because people like porn.
It's just the men running and screaming, saying, no!
I just think it's funny that they had to explicitly include cyber sex.
Like, yeah, they've outlawed...
Who's intellectual property are you stealing when you type, oh baby, oh baby, ooh?
You know? I think that's Britney Spears.
Think of the children.
No, when you're doing cyber sex, do not think of the children. God. Oh. All right, here's another fun one. This one's from CNN.com as well, money.cnn.com. Scores of iPhone 5 users hit Apple support forums over the past week to exchange anecdotal reports of a scary bug. Their phones appear to be sucking down cellular data even when they're connected to a Wi-Fi network, resulting in big overages as they blew through their monthly data caps. Thank God I still... Well, I'm not even on an iPhone, but I'm just like, thank God I've still got my unlimited. But Apple hasn't publicly commented on how widespread the bug is, but the company confirmed its existence on Sunday when it pushed out a software update aimed at fixing it for customers on Verizon's network. The software update resolves an issue in which, under certain circumstances, iPhone 5 may use Verizon cellular data while the phone is connected to a Wi-Fi network, Apple wrote in a posting on its support website. Verizon Wireless customers will not be charged for any unwarranted cellular data usage, a company spokesperson told CNN Money on Monday. The company declined to comment further on the issue. It's unclear if carriers beyond Verizon are also affected. Some on Apple's discussion boards have reported similar problems on AT&T's network. Apple and AT&T did not reply to requests for comments on the issue. A Sprint spokesperson said CNN Money's call late Friday was the first time the company had heard of the issue. Sporadic reports of slow, inconsistent, and buggy Wi-Fi connections have plagued Apple's iOS 6, the operating system that powers the iPhone 5, since its release 12 days ago. So that tells you when the article was written. But the cell data problem adds a nasty new twist to the issue. Carriers are using carrots and sticks to move customers away from unlimited data and towards metered billing plans that cap customers' data use and charge them for overages. Any bugs in how this data is used will hit customers hard on their monthly bills. And now something I added. Now just think about malware on your phone. Like, just think if AT&T dropped some piece of malware on your phone that constantly used the cellular data connection so they could then charge you overages.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't put it past them.
And, that already happens. It's not as common as it could be, but it's happened before.
Yeah.
And it will happen again.
Well, that used to be a thing back in the days of the modem, is that you'd get malware that would hang up on your internet connection and call some 900 number in Russia so they could charge you out the wazoo on your phone bill, and there wasn't really much you could do about it.
Yeah, those guys must really miss dial-up modems.
Well, I'm just wondering how many of them figured out how to do it on a cell phone.
True.
And but there's still a lot of people on dial-up these days.
I believe I just read about a guy who got like $700 in text, some weird text messaging charges from something like that the other day.
I'd believe it. I believe it. So, I mean, I'm just, you know, you get thinking about this. This is from a bug. But with all these, you know, non-unlimited plans being the thing they're pushing now, what happens when your phone is unexpectedly using a lot of data, you know, especially for something like malware or a bug in the OS? And now you're getting the $5,000 bill. You know,
they'll kick some ass.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that how the postal movie started? I mean, or maybe it was falling down. Anyways, I'm gonna get email from people who like really don't like the movie references.
this kind of makes me laugh, dude, because it's starting to prove how, you know, Apple is getting knocked off of its high little pedestal, in my opinion, because a lot more people are buying their products. They're becoming more and more popular, so what's happening? They're becoming more and more of the bureaucracy, so they're like, push out the code. Push out iOS 6 now, even though it sucks. We know it sucks. Who cares? People will buy it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It makes me laugh, because, you know, I'm not Apple's biggest fan.
Well, and that's the thing, too. Everybody's bitching about the maps, and it's like Apple saying they knew the maps were bad.
Exactly,
it's like,
dude.
It's like, well, then why did you ship it?
Because they want to make money. It's iOS 6. Ooh, people will buy it.
Yeah. So, anyways, next story up here. This one's from Torrent Freak. On Monday, the Pirate Bay went offline. By itself, the downtime isn't really news, as it happens every other week, but this time it took longer than expected to return. The Pirate Bay was quick to inform Torrent Freak that they were dealing with a broken power distribution unit, which had to be replaced on site. The part in question arrived in the data center yesterday and has been installed today. And this is a couple of days ago. Considering the nature of the site, the Pirate Bay prefers these issues handled by people who they know rather than a random employee of the hosting facility. That the site was unreachable for a while was unfortunate but necessary. The prolonged downtime didn't go unnoticed by the rest of the internet. In fact, I had several stories lined up about the police raids everybody thought had happened on the Pirate Bay because of this. This week, hundreds of thousands of people were wondering what had happened to their favorite torrent site, and Pirate Bay became one of the hottest searches on Google. But yeah, it coincided with a police raid on one of their former hosting companies that was going after other file-sharing sites. So a lot of people thought the Pirate Bay got pulled down due to a police raid again, when it was really just a power supply. So
funny.
Yeah.
Actually, it was a police raid, and they've just taken over the site now, and now it's back up, and they're monitoring every single connection to the site.
I wouldn't put it past them, to be honest.
Well, that's just it. With how many times...
God damn it, I just downloaded a car. I am so screwed.
With how many times the Pirate Bay's gone down and had all these legal issues, who can really trust the Pirate Bay anymore?
Yeah, exactly, dude. I try to avoid that place like the plague, just in case.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've been warning people away from Demonoid for years, because it would just disappear and randomly pop back up somewhere else in the planet, and it's just like, sure. So, let's see. Okay, this next one's fun. This is from KSL.com, and I think it's a local news station for Salt Lake City, but if you are a company owner or work for one, watch out for a new scam that involves bogus negative reviews online. A company is putting horrible reviews of a small business online and then offering to improve the company's reputation, and will take the reviews off for a fraction of the cost of a real reputation improvement company would charge. Sierra West Jewelers owner Tim Brascombe believes his business was right in the middle of one of these scams. We knew it wasn't really a real thing. Of course, then somebody was offering $500 the day the bad review goes up. It seemed not legitimate. He's probably not a hick, but I needed some way to designate he was speaking. Brascombe believes he and his employees keep their customers happy and answer all complaints. He said when they received a call from a reputation improvement company telling them that they had a negative review online and that the company would take the review off if Sarah West paid $500, then for that same $500, they would monitor the internet to remove any other bad reviews. Brascombe says it was clear from the writing that this bad reviewer had never actually been to the jewelry store. They said they were rude and thug-like, and all we wanted to do was sell them something, and that we put ourselves with everyone else, and blah, 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 blah. So they wrote, just to store it up, there's a scam going around now where somebody writes up a horrible review on Amazon or Yelp or one of the other sites like that, Yahoo, whatever, and then says they'll take it down if you give them money.
Now, isn't this actually illegal? Like, isn't this just blackmail?
Yeah, it sounds like extortion to me.
Yeah, I was going to say extortion. Yeah, exactly.
So, like, I feel like you'd probably be able to just forward that email to Yelp, and they'd remove that review.
They probably would, except they were actually calling these people. What an email.
Oh, okay.
So.
Oh, either way, you could still probably contact Yelp. I'm sure they're well aware of the issue.
All under one account or whatever, and they just ban the account.
Well, I just thought that was kind of a cyberpunkish scam. It's like they go on social sites and they write up a horrible review of your company and then call you up and say, "Hi, we're Better Online Image Solutions Incorporated." And if that's really a company, I'm sorry.
If it's not, it's going to be.
Yeah, there you go. And registered. Anyways,
hey guys, I have this cool idea for a company. We're gonna make millions. I'll talk to you about it after the show.
Yeah, we've noticed this horrible review on all these websites, and we think we can get that cleaned up if you want to pay us X. And it seems like a scam. But the thing is, there really are those online reputation improvement companies. And I guess they're legit. I don't honestly know because I don't really follow them. But I mean, there are really companies that you know try to help you maintain a good online reputation. I don't know if that's by posting good reviews or what, but I mean, the whole thing seems kind of crazy to me in the first place. But
I mean, it makes sense though. I mean, how many times have you looked online for, say, a place to eat or something like that, read the reviews, and like, oh, this place got shitty reviews. So, I mean, it has some merit. I mean, I think your online reputation does matter.
Especially with more and more people on smartphones. It's like,
Yeah, exactly.
According to Yelp, this place, they shit in your food. Let's go somewhere else. I mean, that's just...
Right.
Oh, yeah. Like, all it takes is one negative review to not go to a place. I know that I've not gone to places before because of, like, a single negative review.
Yeah.
So, enough.
Anyways, that's just starting to be, I mean, you know, there's always going to be a scam, and I thought that one was kind of funny, because post a bad review and then offer to take it down for money. I mean, that's just, I could think of several ways that could be automated and then turned into a massive, wow, I'm going to jail. Never mind.
So little effort. Easy to make a lot of money, because like $500 is a little greedy. If you make it like $50, you could get a lot of people pay.
One man in a botnet and you're a millionaire.
There you go. What were you gonna say, sorry?
I need to go check the laws in Canada, see if this is legal.
That's a good scam. Let me go see if it's actually illegal or not. What were you gonna say there, Sard?
I was gonna say what your comment there about how you weren't thinking up illegal ideas. That's called brainstorming, and we're going to be doing that a lot in this new company, so I'm going to need you to show up for work on Monday and bring some more of those ideas.
Yeah, if you could just do those TPS reports, that'd be great. Next story up, this one's from New Scientist. Printing guns is frowned upon. Cody Wilson, a law student at the University of Texas at Austin, found this out last week when Stratasys, the company that made the UPrint SE 3D printer he was leasing, got wind of his plans to design a 3D printable handgun and took back their equipment. The company is less than thrilled with what we're doing. They're trying to prevent me from breaking any laws with their product, Wilson told New Scientist. With several friends, he founded a group called Defense Distributed. Oh, that's an awesome name. It should be like, you know, defense peer distributed or something like that, or peer-to-peer defense. Anyways, to promote ideas about universal gun ownership. I like this guy already. In a letter to Wilson, lawyers from Stratasys cited his lack of a federal firearms manufacturer's license as their reason for the repossession, adding that it does not knowingly allow its printers to be used for illegal purposes. Wilson countered that his group's aim is to disseminate a printable gun design online, not print guns per se. Stratasys wasn't buying that, with good reason. Defense Distributed's stated aims include building of two prototypes of different complexity that can be printed on the UPrint SE. If the guns work, the group will modify the designs for use on entry-level 3D printers like the RepRap, which costs less than $1,000. So far, the plans are limited to computer-drawn designs. No physical prototype exists. But if Wilson and company manage to build the first fully printable gun, they will risk more than just becoming a foul of the law. Bullet propellants can create temperatures of 1,000 degrees Celsius. The powered nylon... or powdered nylon that entry-level 3D printers use for construction, called ABS, cannot cope with that. Yeah, printing a gun out of plastic, not a great idea. Well, you can probably fire it once.
Well, you know, like, really...
Exactly.
You could get away with printing most of the parts of gun, just not, like, the actual moving components.
Yeah, no, you
like,
go buy a pipe.
The pin, the barrel, and everything like that, you leave metal, just... but everything else could be plastic.
We just need to figure out a new way of 3D printing, maybe with... carbon nanofibers and some ceramic that you can heat up.
Actually, well, ceramics could work.
Actually, yeah, but really, you could easily do this just with the lost plastic method. Past it.
Yeah. Anyways, the rest of the story here. The gunpowder explosion would probably be too much for the ABS and other plastics and low-end printers, said Stuart Offer of 3D printing firm 3T RPD in Newbury, UK. In all likelihood, the gun would be destroyed, perhaps even blowing up in the shooter's hands after firing no more than a few rounds. 3D printers exist that fuse metal powders using laser etching or electron beams to produce sturdy solid objects, but those machines cost around $500,000, said Offer, who uses them to make driver roll hoops for Formula One cars. And assembling a gun isn't like snapping together Lego pieces. Each part must fit and move precisely. The story is actually out of the UK. So the UK press covered it. So that's why some of the stuff's odd here.
Yeah, I've got a question.
Yeah.
Anybody ever heard of Shapeways?
Yep.
What's to stop somebody from just sending the models to them, getting them to print it for you? They'll print stuff in steel.
It's prohibitively expensive, for one thing, but...
Well, yeah. But it'd be doable.
My main issue with this, yes, he was doing something really cool with a 3D printer, but he was trying to manufacture a gun. To me, that sounds like just a recipe for the ATF to swarm your house.
But oh, yeah. What did he do that was illegal? He did absolutely nothing that's illegal.
Well, my question is it illegal to build a gun?
In your garage? Actually, no.
Yeah,
if you're going to
sell you just have to have
them,
the proper paperwork.
If you're going to sell them, you do have to have a license, but, I mean, there are garage gun makers all over the country.
Yeah, so if it's that's not illegal, then what's the problem?
Yeah, I don't
know. That's what I'm saying. That's what I don't get. He didn't do anything illegal.
Well, let me finish out the article here. Still, as prices for more sophisticated printers fall, printing functional weapons is likely to become an affordable prospect. When that happens, governments will be faced with a decision. Could they lean on internet service providers to seek out and delete gun design files as they circulate online? Well, good luck with that. Pirate boxes exist. As some ISPs are, encryption. Or as some ISPs are now asked to police music and movie file sharing. That wouldn't work, says Wilson. We know that such efforts would be totally futile and only random and disproportionate enforcement. Another possibility would be more tightly regulate ammunition, as a few U.S. states have done, so that shooters must get a license before they can purchase. I like that idea. Don't license the guns, license the bullets. That's a really good idea, actually.
No, it's
sounds
a
like, what was it,
idea.
Chris Rock's idea?
I don't know. I just think it's funny as hell.
Charge $500 a bullet.
Yeah.
All gun print crime is solved.
So what do you do if people can print their own ammo?
Well, it's probably even easier. No, you'd even have plastic bullets. They won't work very well, but they'd work a little.
Well, you know, it depends on what your goal is, right? But, you know, I'm surprised nobody's talking about printing airsoft guns. Because those are mostly plastic, and the only thing you got to go buy is a spring.
Mm-hmm.
At least for the cheaper ones. I suppose if you're doing the air compression, that might get a little bit more fancy. But, I mean, you could even print your own pellets. So, in fact, I think an airsoft gun would be the perfect thing to design on one of the larger 3D printers. That way you can just watch people shit a brick when you print the damn thing out and post the designs online.
Yeah, I'm actually really shocked. Oh, you know what? People probably have designed it, except the one website where you can... where people like share these designs, Thingiverse actually does not allow weapons on the website.
Oh. So, Pansies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pirate Bay it then.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just think it's a. I mean, it's just interesting to me that they're going after this guy because he was designing a 3D printable gun, and he was leasing the printer from the company, so I'm sure he violated some part of their terms of use. So from a legal standpoint, I
would be interested in seeing
it
if it's actually in there, dude. Like, if it's explicitly it. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. But I still go back to what did he do that violated their EULA, or that's against the law.
They terminated his. All lease agreements have something that they can be terminated at any time by the lessee. So,
and you know, really, like, if you think about it, like, these guys, they make 3D printers. It's in their best interests for 3D printers not to be heavily legislated. And having a high profile situation where somebody's printing weapons that could very well initiate a knee jerk law from some stupid politician. I can kind of understand how they're looking out for their best interests to actually pull this printer from the sky. Now, you know, obviously it's going to have the Barbra Streisand effect and it's going to make it a bit more high profile, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, they're really just looking out for their own best interests.
Eh, I can see that. I just, you know, that's what we talked about in the discussion, so I really wanted to hit that one hard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just interesting that, you know, these things exist that can essentially print any shape you want, and so now they're going to start trying to police what combination of shapes you can put together. It's sort of like policing what combination of bits you can have sit together on your hard drive. It just doesn't work.
Hey, so, I've got one for you. So I was browsing through Hackaday while you guys were talking, and they're talking about a 3D printable rocket engine. So if we can 3D print our own rocket engine, and we can 3D print our own guns, how long until we have rocket guns? Just rocket the gun to somebody and then shoot it.
Oh, wait. On top of that, you can do, unmanned 3D printable aerial drones. So now we can
mount
the rocket guns onto the flying drones.
And take out the government drones. Nice.
And then we can put 3D printers on these drones so they're self-replicating.
Oh shit.
Jesus Christ.
I think you just went retarded there.
I think he just created Snet.
Yeah, we're doomed. So, alright, next one up here. This one's from CNET. This is always fun. The Obama administration will tell federal judges in New Orleans today that warrantless tracking of the location of Americans' mobile phone devices is perfectly legal. The federal prosecutors are planning to argue that they should be able to obtain stored records revealing minute-by-minute movements of mobile phone users over a 60-day period. In this case, T-Mobile and Metro PCS customers, without having to ask a judge to approve a warrant first. The case highlights how valuable location data is for police, especially when it's tied to devices that millions of people carry with them almost all the time. Records kept by the wireless carriers can hint at or reveal medical treatments, political associations, religious convictions, and even whether or not somebody's cheating on his or her spouse. It's at a point now where the public awareness about this specific issue is growing, says Henny Fakoury, F-A-K-H-O-U-R-Y. I don't mean to mispronounce people's names. I just suck at it. a staff attorney at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, who will be arguing that the pro-privacy side of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals this morning. Today's oral arguments are remarkably timely. On Sunday, California Governor Jerry Brown, a Democrat, vetoed a bill that would have required law enforcement to obtain location warrants. And last week, Representative Zoe Loughran, a Democrat representing Silicon Valley, introduced pro-warrant federal legislation so that they don't even, it's not political, it's just some people don't know what it is. CNET discovered that the Justice Department's warrantless tracking request in 2005. More than 7 years later, the legal landscape remains unsettled. Two other appeals courts making different approaches, and plenty of lower courts. I just lost my place. I bumped the scroll wheel and lost my place. Oh my god. And plenty of lower courts disagreeing. Meanwhile, a coalition of tech companies and advocacy groups, including AT&T, Facebook, and Google, has all been begging Congress to update the law to require warrants. The Justice Department declined to respond to questions from CNET yesterday. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, here's the important part. In a legal brief filed before the Fifth Circuit Court in February, the Justice Department says its position is consistent with the Fourth Amendment because a customer has no privacy interest in cell site records, which are business records created and stored by a cell phone provider in its ordinary course of business. So their argument is that you have no expectation of privacy in your cell phone records.
Yeah, right.
I think the only reason you can make that argument is because if you ask most people about it, they don't realize that their location is in those records.
Right.
So it's the only reason they can make the argument that you have no expectation of privacy is because of the ignorance of the people they're asking. Well, it's got to be.
Well, if it gets out, they won't be in there for very long.
That's true. What were you going to say?
If you have nothing to hide, what are you worrying about?
I have plenty of things to hide.
Says Big Brother.
Yeah, says Big Brother.
I got plenty to hide, but I mean, if you think about it, there's so many privacy issues with this. I mean, yeah, they can see what religion you are, because what church you go to. They can see your, you know, they can see where you go hang out, you know, on weekends, if you go to Tea Party rallies or if you go to Occupy movements or whatever. Sure, your local police might not do much with that data other than check, well, was he at the crime scene? No? Okay, next guy. But I could see political operatives having a field day with this kind of shit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, as far as the whole political stuff goes. But, you know, like, play devil's advocate. Like, how long does it take to get a warrant for tracking a phone?
If they have a good reason, not that long.
Like, a speedy one, let's say a day, you know, maybe like 6 hours if you're really lucky, you know, and you can manage to find a judge somewhere who doesn't have anything else going on. That's all fine and good, but like, let's say it's like a kidnapping or something where somebody's life is actually in danger. I feel like in that sort of situation, bypassing that warrant is probably not a bad idea. Now, how do you distinguish that? And how do you legislate? Well, oh, in some situations they can, in some situations they can't.
Well, we kind of have that already with the whole probable cause thing when it comes to warrants. So if you're, but there are, you can get warrants very quickly if it's a situation like that. That's the thing. I mean, all it is you say to the judge real quick, well, this person's been kidnapped and we're trying to set track their cell phone. Hell, they can probably go to the family of whoever it is if they're trying to track a kidnap victim and just get permission. I mean, it wouldn't take that long at all. It's just like, do you give us consent to go pull your cell phone records? Abso-fucking-lutely. At that point, they don't need a warrant. You just gave them consent. You know, that's why cops always ask if they can come in the house whenever they're at your doors. If you let them in, that's giving them consent. So, you know, I mean, it's if you give them consent, they don't need a warrant. So situationally...
Well, that depends, officer. Do I have to give you a drink?
It's like, here, let me roll down my window. Officer, would you like a beer? Oh, you ever seen anybody actually do that? Roll down the window and offer
like
the
to.
Officer a beer? I've seen a few pretty wild tailgate parties. It was hilarious. The car was parked, don't get me wrong, but it was still really funny. Anyways, so yeah, I think it's sad that they're making an argument based on the fact that most people don't understand what's in those records. And I think Swap's got a decent enough point there that generally it's not that hard to get a warrant, at least in the States. If,
right.
You know, if you get family to give consent to access the records or whatever, I don't think it'd be that big of an issue. Because they do warrants quickly if they need to. So, and, you know, there's still probable cause. So, you know, if you do have the, you know, action movie situation where they've got to get in right now because the bomb's going to go off or whatever, I'm sure there's ways to deal with that. So, and that's all in good proper writing of the law, because if you just say, unless it's inventive emergency, then in that case, everything becomes an emergency. So, not like that hasn't happened in government before. No. Let's see. Next, where were we? Another BBC story here. Devin Caro from New York in America. Why is it all these cool stories about the States are coming from British publications?
Because all we care about is American Idol.
Apparently. Devin Caro from the New York and America from New York in America uses the 3,000 euro RoboSWAT to answer his teacher's questions and take part in group discussions. And seriously, guys, go click on the link and look at this thing. This is cool. Yeah,
it's fucking sexy. I had just stumbled across that story like 2 minutes ago, completely independently of
all from the comfort of his home. The high-tech gadget uses HD cameras to show Devon his classroom, and he can signal when he wants to give an answer with a flashing light. Devon has lots of allergies, which means it's dangerous for him to be around other children. His mom says that the equipment helps him feel included and realize that he still has to go to school the same as any other child. So what this kid has, who they say lots of allergies, I'm not sure what the condition is. I mean, I guess if it's you get the right kind of allergies, but he's essentially got a telepresence robot he's walking around his school with.
I just want to interject here real quick. Odds are he probably just has an extremely overprotective helicopter mom. Like, I'm not even shitting you. Like, that's probably the case.
I know, but I mean, that's just lots of allergies. But the kid's got a telepresence robot. That's badass. I don't care.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And it looks like something out of a sci-fi movie, really. Like, it's like a nice streamlined kind of awesome.
And I'm just thinking along the lines of, maybe he'd be like the bubble boy, where they have to live in a bubble, so it's easier to use the telepresence robot than walking around in a giant balloon.
Like, what I'm really curious about is, like, how do the other kids interact with him? Like, it'd be really interesting to be, like, a fly on the wall for a week or something like that, just to kind of observe how he actually interacts with everybody. Because, if you're basically using this for, like, what is it, like 8 or 7 hours a day or something like that of going to school? Like, does he go out during lunch with all the other kids at recess? Do they, like, play games or anything like that?
They just shut him off and plug him into the wall to recharge his battery or something. Yeah. I mean,
like, wouldn't that be cruel?
What, like, okay, but think about this. Okay, this is fun, actually. When we all met up at Gen Con, we all had a little bit of dissociation going on because we weren't used to seeing what people actually looked like. We were mostly, at the time, still used to the Second Life avatars or your Skype picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, if you think about it, how many other kids are only going to know this kid as the face on the robot walking around?
At least it's his real face.
Well, I mean, I don't know. He could, print something out and stick it over the...
I would probably do that.
I wonder how many kids just attach papers with giant dicks drawn on it to this robot.
Just stick stuff on it where you can't see it.
This kid is gonna have a horrible time in high school.
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna put white out on my camera lens again.
Mom. Oh God. Anyways. So, but yeah, I just thought that was. I just think it's badass. The kid's got a telepresence robot. That's cool. Think of the identity issues, though. What if he comes to identify himself and all of his friends is only coming through that screen?
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be... That's got to be strange,
I wonder what dating will be like with the robot. I mean, he's going to have to get a teledildonics unit.
Just, he goes for the cheap route and just straps a dildo on the front of it.
Oh, God.
forward, back. Okay, I am sorry. Let's just do the last story and get into Digital Dojo here. Let's see. A group of MIT students decided... This is the Cory Doctorow story I mentioned before. A group of MIT students decided to test the performance of different tinfoil beanies to see how various designs, the Classic, the Fez, and the Centurion, interacted with commonly used industrial radio applications. They found that all three designs actually amplified these mind control rays, radio waves, and suggested that the tinfoil hat meme might be a false flag operation engineered to trick the wily and suspicious into making it easier to beam messages into their head. And the actual quote from the article. Among a fringe community of paranoids, aluminum helmets serve as the protective measure of choice against invasive radio signals. We investigate the efficiency of three aluminum helmet designs on a sample of group of four individuals. Using a $250,000 network analyzer. My God.
Well, odds are they probably didn't buy the analyzer.
No, they just had it. But still, it's just like, wow. We found that on average, all helmets attenuate invasive radio frequencies in either direction, either emanating from an outside source or emanating from the cranium of the subject. They tested this. Certain frequencies are in fact greatly amplified. These amplified frequencies coincide with radio bands reserved for government use and according to the FCC. Statistical evidence suggests that use of these helmets may in fact enhance the government's invasive abilities. We speculate that the government may in fact have started the helmet craze for this reason. We evaluated the performance of three different helmet designs, commonly referred to as the Classical, the Fez, and the Centurion. These designs are portrayed and they got a picture of them. The helmets are made of Reynolds aluminum foil. As per best practices, all three designs were constructed with the double layering technique described elsewhere. A radio frequency test signal sweeping from the ranges of 10 kHz to 3 GHz was generated using an omnidirectional antenna attached to the Anglet 8714ET signal generator. Now, as a side note, the study was done in 2005. It's been brought up many times, but I saw that getting brought up again, so I thought, okay, we got to have some fun with this. So that is just such a greatly written article. I mean, it's just...
Well, really, like these people are doing it wrong. They can't, like, if it's not grounded, yeah, that's exactly what it's going to do. They need to be wearing full suits of chicken wire. But it has to be grounded, and you'll be fine. You'll be able to block all radio wavelengths.
Well, if you think about it for a second, it kind of makes sense that the aluminum foil hat would not block radio waves very well. What shape is a satellite dish?
Yeah.
Parabola, yeah.
Oops. So, anyways.
I predict there's going to be a huge resurgence of chainmail.
Nice. So, anyways, I think it's time we moved on to this.
Me love you long time.
I just love the gong. That's just great. Digital Dojo. I've got a handful of stuff for Digital Dojo tonight. First up, this is from the Spider Labs blog. Back at Black Hat earlier this year, a guy had figured out how to use an Arduino and a couple of resistors and a DC barrel jack to pop open the lock in very expensive hotel room locks. If anybody hasn't read the article, I think we mentioned it at the time. It's pretty cool. Essentially, the DC barrel jack is also a rudimentary serial port for programming these hotel room locks and also charging them because the little battery. So I guess they got a maintenance guy who walks around and plugs the things in for however long to charge them. And he figured out by studying the technical documentation for these locks that you could, in fact, interact with them over the port and wrote a little Arduino sketch that, when hooked up, would pop the door lock open through the administrative access. Apparently there's a bug in it that lets them just do that. And so the guys at Spider Labs took an Arduino and pulled the ATmega off the Arduino board, added a couple of components, hid the whole damn thing inside a whiteboard pin, put the DC barrel jack in place of the felt tip on the pin, and had a whiteboard that they can walk around and open hotel room locks with.
That's so pretty sexy.
They've got a nice little guide there. It's nice because it's got a full circuit diagram. There's not really a lot of pictures. I'm pointing this out not saying... I mean, I've actually got the parts. I'm going to construct something similar for fun. I'm not going to use a whiteboard pen, but I would like to build one, see if I can get it to work just for fun. I'm pointing it out not because I think people ought to follow the guide, but it's just a nice idea. It's good inspiration, you know? You know, especially things like an Arduino, they're really easy to hide in other shit. So, you know, some good information there, especially that circuit diagram.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, hey, nobody else have anything to say on the whiteboard there? Or white pen?
It's freaking cool. Build one. Show it to me next year.
That's the plan, to see how many hotel rooms we can get in with it.
Hell yes.
Like, oh, you can invite us in or we can just walk in. Anyways, that's not creepy at all. Next one up, in the same vein, I got another link here. This one's from GNRDS, where they wanted to build that. The Pwnplug guys had built that computer inside of a surge protector. These guys decided they wanted to do the same thing but didn't want to spend a couple grand on it. So they put a Raspberry Pi inside of their surge protector. to make a, you know, a Dropbox.
Nice.
And the design's a little hokey because apparently they're running the full mainline's power across the Raspberry Pi board at one point. yeah, I'm not sure on how they're doing that and having it not blow up, but I didn't get to study it that long. But they've got a ton of pictures of the build, so it's definitely worth checking it out. It's neat looking too. But yeah, they took a Nook USB power adapter and hooked that right into the rails on the surge protector. And then they ran something else off the rails onto the Raspberry Pi for it to detect that it's on, like that it's getting power. So I don't know why you would run 120 volts to the damned thing, but apparently they did. Or I looked at a design wrong. I don't care. Anyways, it's badass. And again, you know, it's not a, you know, don't look at it as a how-to guide, but look at it as inspiration. Raspberry Pis are really small. So, you know, think about being able to hide them inside other things, like, you know, surge protectors, briefcases, other laptops, just, for, you know, it's a computer in the computer. Yo, dog.
it kind of bothers me, though. I mean, the Raspberry Pi is still kind of hard to get for some people, and they're just throwing it in a power supply and shoving 120 volts on it.
Well, oops. I may have misread the picture diagram there, but yeah, it's fairly simple. They're powering it up, and it's just kind of like, wow. And it's such a simple idea, though, really.
Oh yeah, I actually think that's a great idea, especially, like, you know, all these surge protectors now that have you know, like little USB ports for charging stuff and stuff like that on them. Be easy to just USB, like, reroute that to your Raspberry Pi or whatever, like you said, for a Dropbox or something.
Okay, I pulled the picture back up because I figured I had to be looking at it wrong, and I was.
Good job.
Yeah, no, they didn't. They don't have the Raspberry Pi directly on the rails. It's just really fucking close to them.
Still bad.
So I hope that thing's secured well. But yeah, no, it does really look like they've got that 120 volt line hitting the Raspberry Pi there. So yeah. So if you're going to build one of these, be careful. But still, you know, like I said, use it as inspiration. It's just kind of neat. And think about what you could hide something in and then build something. And the final thing I have in Digital Dojo tonight is I did not get to go to DerbyCon this year. It just didn't work out, which kind of sucked. But Iron Geek's got all the videos up for us. Yay! So if you go on that link there to Iron Geek's site, you can get all the DerbyCon videos. Great fun to watch, especially the Computing After the Apocalypse talk that the Paul.com guys gave. That is actually really good. Let me find the exact name of the talk because it was Hacking Survival. So you want to compute post-apocalypse. They're up there in full camo giving the awesome talk. It's actually really good. They go into like, you know, a lot, you know, the two is one, one is none concept with computers. They talk about, you know, if, you know, they talk about a bunch of different stuff, but how to set things up and plan things for, it's like, you know, world disaster, all technology was destroyed by an EMP except for whatever you had shielded. So how do you start? You know, where do you go from there? So it, good talk, but plenty of other good talks on there. That's just, you know, one of the ones that stood out in my mind. Great fun to watch, especially for a cyberpunk talk. But yeah, no, there's lots of good stuff on there, and he's got almost all the videos up. I think he's still waiting on permission to post the Kevin Mitnick video, and I think he's got a couple of notes on others where there were problems. But yeah, so anyways, though, definitely check those out. That's all I've really got. Is it let's see. Oh yeah, promos. Of course, always listen to the stream. We're constantly updating it. We've added new music to it. The music I'm going to close out the show with tonight was a new artist we just recently added to the stream. Big Brother tracked them down, actually, so thank you, Big.
No problem.
And, of course, Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. NR7, whenever somebody, you know, decides to let BSV out of his own dungeon. Apparently, he's locked himself down there again. Of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback form, and the shout box. Is there anything I've forgotten?
Nope.
Awesome.